This is Radio Eco Shock with Alex Smith.
Heating at the poles will determine the fate of this life on Earth. Jet stream winds delivering extreme cold, heat, or storms to the northern hemisphere are already changing. American expert Matt Osman breaks new research for us. At the same time, we are seeing the first and largest human impact on the planet. It is threatening human settlements, roads, and pipelines in the far north as the permafrost thaws. Forests fall over, buildings fall over, and roads crack open. Oil and gas pipelines break, even as our energy crisis develops. From Austria, Dr. Annette Barsch brings us the new big picture of the Arctic risk. When the last great glaciers finally pulled back from North America and Europe, Earth warmed an incredible 6 degrees C, over 10 degrees Fahrenheit, just to reach the climate you feel today. That took about 20,000 years. Now, in the worst-case scenario, humans may heat the planet another 6 degrees C in less than 200 years. Not much of the life you recognize could survive that. Even wilder, Dr. Osman's team found increasing greenhouse gases are not enough to explain that kind of temperature rise that they saw in the last 20,000 years. When the great white ice sheet stopped reflecting sunlight back to space, that added as much heat or more than greenhouse gases. In the last couple of decades, Arctic sea ice has shrunk and Greenland is melting at a furious pace. Snow covers the Arctic lands less and less each year. That loss of reflection, called albedo change, adds to warming coming from human greenhouse gas emissions. Dr. James Hansen warned about all this, a major shift in Earth's energy imbalance. That is why we spend so much time on Radio EcoShock investigating changes in the Arctic, a place hardly mentioned in mainstream news. Plus, as we heard from scientist Nico Wunderling in my last November 3rd show, Cascading Tipping Points, new studies show ice melt on Greenland is key. It is the first planetary tipping point. When megatons of fresh water pour off Greenland into the Atlantic, Earth systems, from the temperate weather to Amazon dieback to the South Pole, can be triggered. Concurrent with thawing permafrost land, Greenland is melting now. So I ask for your curiosity and patience as we dig into scientific reports in this show. What we now know about the Great Arctic Shift. Here we go.
This is Radio EcoShock with your host, Alex Smith.
About 24% of the Northern Hemisphere land is heading towards thaw. It is one of the first planet-scale impacts of climate change. How many people, buildings, and other human projects are at risk, and how soon? We just found out with an amazing new map of everything human within 100 kilometers of the Arctic coast, and it's coupled with the latest estimates for permafrost thaw. The paper is called Expanding Infrastructure and Growing Anthropogenic Impacts Along Arctic Coasts. We reached the lead author, Dr. Annette Barsch. She is a member of the Austrian Polar Research Institute, a lecturer in prestigious universities in Austria and Germany in the past, and now heads her own research company called B.Geos. Her current project is mapping the permafrost for ESA, the European Space Agency. From Austria, Annette Barsch, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Yeah, hello.
When it comes to human development in the Arctic, why do we need machine help to analyze all that satellite data? Why not just count stuff on Google Earth?
So the Arctic is really huge. Well, we think that it's rather empty or there are not many people living there, but actually that's not the case. So we have several hundreds of settlements across the Arctic, indigenous communities, and there are also industrial developments. There's quite high diversity in what we are looking for. And in addition, the Arctic is a quite diverse place. So we have different kind of tundra environments, and actually we also find forests on permafrost. And in order to identify whatever there is on the land cover, we need really precise information. And this for us means a very good spatial resolution, so really high detail. Well, there are satellites which can provide us this detail. A very convenient type of data is provided by the European Copernicus program that allows us to look at the Arctic with a 10-meter resolution. And then thinking about the entire Arctic, this means eventually that we need to use a lot of data. It's very demanding regarding data processing. Just storing the data is demanding. So that's one part of the story. And another part is how to identify what is relevant for infrastructure, and if we think about settlements. And how can we distinguish that from other typical landscape, tundra, shrubs, rivers, and so on. So if we open Google Earth and look at that, it's so clear. It really, you see, okay, this is the road, this is a building, and so on. But we need to teach somehow the computer to automatically to identify this. And that's where it's becoming difficult. So that's not so easy. So there are some traditional approaches which are just based on how something is looking like, you know, what color it has. But there are like a riverbed, which is for some time without water, may look the same like a gravel road. This is not so helpful in this case.
So is human activity in the Arctic increasing, and how would you know that?
Yes, so we can go back in time with the satellite data, not very far back in time, unfortunately, but for several decades. So we have really good records going back to 2000. But we cannot really detect the settlements themselves going back to 2000 for the entire Arctic, because that would require very good spatial detail or spatial resolution. And this high resolution we only have available for a bit more than 5 years, at least with a circumpolar coverage. So when we go back in time, we use other sensors which provide a bit coarser resolution detail. They do not provide infrastructure, but they can give us information about vegetation. And this is quite useful in this case, because what happens when something is built or some... So the vegetation is removed. Yeah? So we have a change from shrubs, tundra to a road surface or something like this. That's what we can see in these vegetation records. So we are looking at vegetation trends. So what is the change in greenness? And when we see a very strong change, that's usually due to human activity. So now we have, from the last 5 years, we have this really detailed record, the 10-meter resolution for the settlement and the infrastructure. So we combine that with the vegetation trend. And all these current infrastructure, which has a strong decline in vegetation since 2000, we know. So this has been built very recently. And what we found with our analysis was that for the Arctic, within this 100-kilometer zone of the coast that we looked at, 15% of what we detected has been built or is new after 2000. And it largely can be associated with oil and gas industry, but also in some cases with mining.
How can anyone map where the ground is frozen and how deep it's frozen over such a large area? Presumably satellites cannot measure below surface temperatures.
Yeah. This is extremely challenging, because with the satellites, we cannot look into the ground. We only see the surface. So, but for the surface, we have several options. We can measure the temperature, yeah, by looking at the thermal infrared. So that gives us some good indications of seasonal and annual changes in surface temperature. And then a second approach would be to use radar data, microwave observations, as these type of observations are very sensitive to changes of what we call the dielectric properties, which also change with freezing and thawing. But most convenient are these land surface temperature measurements from space. These can help us to model the temperatures in the ground. So we need to make some assumptions about what are the soil properties, so what is the heat conductivity, how well is are these temperature variations in the air, how well are they transferred into the ground. There is some buffering due to vegetation, soils, specifically organic-rich soils on the top. Then there is some insulation due to snow cover. Well, we have a snow cover in most of these areas for a long time during the year. And if the snow is deeper than, let's say, 40 centimeters, then we have quite a good insulation. So the what is happening in the ground is decoupled from what is happening in the air during the winter time. So this is really important to consider in this case. So if you take all this information together, and the temperature at the surface, the presence of snow, the type of soil, and we combine that so that we can model the temperature in the ground. So we have quite a good understanding based on satellite data of where we can potentially find permafrost in the soil. And that also gives us a good estimate on how deep the surface is thawing every summer. By definition, we do not find permafrost at the very surface, because the definition is that permafrost is ground that stays continuously frozen for at least 2 years in a row. But at the surface, we have some thawing. When the snow goes and temperatures go up, we have some thawing at the surface. And the depth of this thaw, it's usually several tenths of a centimeter, can be also several meters deep, this what we call the active layer on top of the permafrost.
Well, let's talk about the impacts a little bit. I mean, we have Canadian engineers who say thousands of miles of roads in Canada's north are at risk as permafrost thaws. Even the Chinese have to constantly rebuild a key road into the high plateau of Tibet for the same reason. What happens to roads when the permafrost, when it all becomes sort of liquid under there?
Due to the permafrost, there is some damage to roads. It also depends on what measures have been taken during the time when the road was built. So there are some possibilities how the ground could be protected, let's say, from the influence that the road building itself has. So this is usually accounted for. But what one also needs to consider is that there is in addition to the seasonal variations and the impact of disturbance by the road building itself, so that we also have the increasing ground temperatures due to climate change. So we have a deeper thawing of the ground, which can lead to additional instability. And that needs to be considered when building new infrastructure, that the ground could thaw even deeper. Otherwise, this can lead to some damages of the road and damages of the infrastructure.
And what about pipelines going across Russia's Arctic lands? Are they at risk as well?
Yeah, the most of, or quite a large part of the oil and gas industry extraction areas in Russia, they are actually located on permafrost, or in regions where we have permafrost at the moment. And specifically, Western Siberia is an area where we expect that the ground temperature is changing very rapidly in the next decades, so that where even permafrost is disappearing in some areas. So this actually means that a large part of this infrastructure will be affected, and it needs to be considered regarding the maintenance of these really long pipeline networks, which actually have been built only very recently. That's something that we have seen, that we identified with our in our new study.
Judging from the results of your team's study, it seems that half of everything humans have built on the ground will thaw at least 2 meters deep by 2050. And I wonder, considering the early state of Arctic science, how certain are we about the timing of permafrost thaw? Could it be less than your paper's conclusions, or could it come sooner?
It's ongoing, so we are certain about this. And what also other studies showed is that compared to what we expected a few years ago, so 10 years ago, 20 years ago, things have changed much quicker than expected. So this is depending on now the model that you are using or the approach that you are using to predict how permafrost will change in the future. Of course, you get different results. But from experience from the past, it seems that changes are going on much quicker than expected. And this specific region that, or these transition zones that we identified in our area, which will undergo rather soon changes, those are areas where most of the studies which look into these issues see changes in the next decade. So we are quite certain about that things will change in certain regions. The exact magnitude, okay, it might be a little bit different, but there will be certainly some change.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith with our guest, Dr. Annette Bartsch. She is lead author of A New View of the Arctic, where human developments are at risk as permafrost thaws in a warming planet. I didn't see in this study the erosion of coastlines from other climate-driven forces, like the lack of sea ice protecting the coasts from waves, from rising seas and more extreme storm events. How does all that fit into permafrost instability, or does it? Were you just looking at the inland parts?
Well, in that specific study, we just looked into the inland part, but actually the motivation for our study, that was driven by what is changing along the coastline. And here it's really important on what is happening on the ocean or what is happening with the sea ice. How long is the ice-free period? Because that determines in many regions the rate of coast erosion. So the longer it's ice-free, the more coastal erosion can happen, because then you have the wave action. And these coasts, they are changing actually rapidly. We have really high rates in some areas. It can be 5 meters per year, 10 meters per year in extreme cases. And that's due to the fact that there is permafrost. So these, we have also a lot of ice in the ground that melts when these coasts are eroding. And all the infrastructure is under threat in these areas. So that's why we initially started to look at settlements and infrastructure in the Arctic.
The largest cities and population in the Arctic are in Russia. Surely the Russian government and their space agencies are mapping it out. Are the Russians sharing data with Western scientists, and are they publishing on this?
Yeah, we work a lot together with Russian scientists. And I actually just presented this very study 2 weeks this study went online. I have been actually in Russia. I have been in Western Siberia at the conference with a focus on permafrost monitoring and technology. And I've been presenting my results there, presenting it also to the local administration. And we work a lot together with Russian scientists, because they do a really extensive, what we call in situ measurements. So they go there and measure how the ground is changing, how the coasts are changing, how the temperatures in the soils are changing. So when we calibrate our models, or ground temperature change, this data that actually comes from Russian scientists. Now, regarding the infrastructure and settlements for the development areas, industrial development areas, they are also doing their own surveys for a certain purpose and specific for certain settlements. So what we are focusing on in our study is the entire Arctic. So our aim is to get the full picture of what is happening in the Arctic across all these different regions, across all different use types, like for indigenous communities, then the oil, gas industry, mining areas, all of that together. So there are, of course, in Russia, the local administrations and researchers there, they are aware of the issues and they are also investigating that. Engineers are discussing what to do, how to consider these changes, how to integrate projections of climate change and ground temperature change into their activities. So there's quite a lot ongoing in Russia, and we are cooperating with the colleagues in Russia.
I'd like to see the techniques that you used to help us produce a similar kind of planet-wide tally of increasing human impacts. And I wonder, has that already been done, or could it be done?
Yeah, there are actually several really interesting approaches how one could do this. But they usually give part of the picture. And we have partially also used that, for example, looking at night lights. So that's a really well-working, really cool approach to look at how the human impact is, or distribution is changing over the entire globe. For that, the assumption is that there is some certain amount of light being produced. And that's, of course, the case for when we think about industrial development. There's usually some change in night light, but that specifically points to sources of light. And then there's more infrastructure. So many of these roads, they do not have lighting in the night. And then there are also really nice, also already long-term records on built-up areas on a global scale. And they are based on various types of global data set. And they are confined to where we have high density of buildings, so that they can be mapped with comparatively coarse spatial resolution satellite data. But they are usually leaving out these really small settlements, but they give us a good idea about bigger cities. But they also then exclude these like roads and smaller patches of infrastructure. What we developed for the Arctic is a specific approach which goes beyond these globally available data sets, which focus on just build up or the night lights. This is very demanding. And then a step making that for the entire globe, that would be really a big job, because you need to also consider different types of environments and different types of infrastructure that it occur. So actually, similar types of studies as we have done for the Arctic are made for like Africa, some regions. So machine learning has been tested also with the same type of data that we have been using. So it's used in areas where you have no good records from the local governments on infrastructure. There it's very useful. But on a global scale, that would be really, really very demanding and difficult to implement.
So one end of the Earth is thawing, and it's not really reported much in the evening news. It's far away, and we think, well, few people live there. I don't know. We don't really know much about it. But I said in the introduction, this might be one of the first planetary scale signs of climate change. Would you agree with that?
Yes, we see really large changes in the Arctic. Temperatures increase much more in the Arctic than in other areas. So we see this when we look at sea ice. So there you can really see the changes. but changes are also happening on land. And this, there are several millions of people actually living in the Arctic, in coastal regions, and they are directly affected by climate change. And it's, they are directly affected by the changes which are already visible there. So it's really important to quantify what is happening there. What is the impact on the local population? And in the long term, it also then affects us living outside of the Arctic. When we see we have these changes in ground temperature, this affects material, what is carbon, what is currently stored in the ground. So it's currently frozen. Climate change with increasing temperatures, yeah, soil may thaw, and then this carbon goes into the atmosphere in addition to what we already bring into the atmosphere. So that's then going to increase, to further increase temperatures. So it's not just the increasing temperatures that we are seeing now. So this is, we will see some impact here from the carbon which goes into, in addition, into the atmosphere from the thawing permafrost.
Why did an Austrian scientist with a doctorate from a university in Britain become engaged with changes in the far north, Annette?
Well, actually, I have been myself. I have been interested in the Arctic already since my time in school. Already when I was studying, I was focusing on the Arctic and have been traveling in to the Arctic. So I can't really say why that has been, or why I've been interested already to that for a long time. I've just been fascinated by these regions since I was a child. And then in addition, we have now these global changes ongoing, climate change ongoing. So there's really a need to study what is ongoing there. And you can see the changes there. And that's something what is also driving my research interest, the scientific interest in these regions.
We've been speaking with Dr. Annette Bartsch, expert researcher and head of the Austrian company B.Geos. You can find links to this new view of the thawing Arctic in my show blog at ecoshock.org. Annette, thank you so much for sharing time with us.
Thank you.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.
These days, it is fashionable to talk about humans and agriculture moving northward to escape burning heat further south. It is a stupid dream, a lie we tell ourselves for comfort. When you can find Arctic soil at all, it is thin and too acidic to grow much. The growing season is short to non-existent due to frost that can come any month of the year. Agriculture is not going to happen in the Arctic on any scale to support cities there. Pretending the Arctic is some kind of lifeboat for overheated Earth is madness. That is just another escape dream like colonizing Mars. Give it up. With the climate emergency, we need to reverse that dream. We are at the choke point when there is no room left in the atmosphere for more emissions. In this severe emergency, which it is, masses of humans need to withdraw from the Arctic until a civilization without fossil dependency can emerge. We also need to wait until the land there stabilizes and nature adapts how she can. At the other end of the world, Greenpeace demanded Antarctica be declared a world park. In 1991, members of the Antarctic Treaty agreed a minimum 50-year prohibition on mineral mining there. As fossil-dependent development in the Arctic threatens the livable climate of the whole world, it is time to prohibit further growth in that far north and begin a plan of withdrawal, starting with the oil and gas industry. All new oil and gas exploration there must be banned. Existing wells and pipelines need to be dismantled and cleaned up for the sake of our kids and our grandchildren and all the other species. Yes, it is possible the fossil gangsters who dominate economies of northern countries would start a world war before they give up their dreams to drill and mine out all the Arctic land and sea. Yes, homes and industry in Europe, Canada, and the U.S. need to find safe energy fast as the Arctic taps turn off. The same governments have to stop building their fragile territorial claims by subsidizing settlement and development in the Arctic. Major banks need to end loans for Arctic projects. Nobody needs to invest in wrecking the planet, especially when the Arctic trigger for cascading tipping points is there. Until a new fossil-free and sustainable civilization comes, let the great withdrawal from the Arctic begin. That is what reality demands for our common survival. Get out of the Arctic and leave it alone. Pass it on. I'm Alex Smith. Thank you for listening and caring about our world.
This is a climate emergency. Find out more on the blog, ecoshock.org. No sign up, just the latest info, free for all. ecoshock.org.